Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Sometimes I'm asked to give equal time on Radio Curious to people of different opinions, and I'd like to do that on this edition of Radio Curious. A number of years ago, I interviewed David Osborne, the author of a book called The Last Pope. That prompted me to put this week's program together from the archives. It's a discussion that was led by Paul Krasner at the International Humor Society's convention that was held near Phoenix, Arizona in April of 1987. At that conference, there were a group of Soviet citizens who work on a Russian humor magazine that was then called Crocodile. They came to the International Humor Society, and I attended, and I was interested in asking some of them, who was the member of the KGB who was with them? And did they know who in the group of attendees was the member of the FBI? They were somewhat taken aback and really didn't want to answer that question. Later in the conference, Paul Krasner, the editor of a magazine that is no longer in publication called The Realist, who was there, was telling about how he had dinner that evening at the Holiday Inn with members of the Russian Crocodile group, and he told a story about that dinner, and that's the story I'd like to share with you in this edition of Radio Curious. It has to do with an experience that Paul Krasner had in Chicago a number of years before, where he had met the Pope, purely by coincidence, at the O'Hare Airport. But before we listen to Paul Krasner, how about a song from the 50s called The Old Dope Peddler, sung by Tom Lehrer?
Because he knows full well that today's young innocent faces will be tomorrow's clientele. Here's a cure for all your troubles. Here's an end to all distress. It's the old dope peddler with his powdered happiness.
Tom Lehrer was in attendance at Harvard University until June 1953 as an undergraduate, a graduate student, and a teacher of mathematics. And moving right along to the main topic in today's program, spreading joy wherever he goes is something that Paul Krasner likes to do on a frequent basis. So here's Paul's story about his experience when he had dinner with the members of the Russian Crocodile magazine and their staff at the International Humor Conference held in Tucson, Arizona in April of 1987. Paul is introduced by the conference chairman, whose name I forgot.
Earlier today, we heard the confessions of a raving, unconfined fount of sarcasm anonymous. Our brother is here this evening, and he's going to talk about the confessions of a raving, unconfined nut. Oh.
I should point out that that title comes from a poison pen letter, which was written by the FBI to Life magazine in 1968, after they ran a favorable profile of me in life, the FBI, are you laughing at the fact that they would run a favorable profile of me? See, laughter is a communicative thing, even though it's abstract. The FBI, as part of its COINTEL counterintelligence program, had sent a letter to Life magazine, not on FBI stationery. It was signed Howard Rasmussen, Brooklyn College, School of General Studies. To give it, again, that verisimilitude, it sounded so real because it was so specific. And it was a letter saying that they were going to cancel, and with deliberate misspellings, that they were going to cancel their subscription, that he, Howard Rasmussen, was going to cancel his subscription to Life magazine, and that the realist was an unimportant little rag, and that I was a raving, unconfined nut. Now, this is true, of course, but it's not what taxpayers' money was going to the FBI to be literary critics. And the FBI would not send a letter like that without permission. This was the New York office which sent it, and the Washington office approved it. Cartha Deloche and William Sullivan, who were J. Edgar Hoover's two top aides, approved it. And the reason they approved it was, they said, this will show the unsavory character of Krasner. The interesting thing was that that kind of attempt at character assassination. Incidentally, the Life magazine did not print the letter because they printed a letter from me canceling my subscription because they would print a profile of somebody such as me. So I inadvertently beat the FBI at its own game. The important point is that I had not broken any law. I was working perfectly within the First Amendment. But the next year, in 1969, if you can indulge in that kind of character assassination undercover like that, then where will it lead? In this case, it led to flyers printed and distributed anonymously by the FBI in black neighborhoods, and these flyers had a huge swastika on it. In the four spaces of the four square spaces in the swastika, they had photos of Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin from the Youth International Party, Mark Rudd from Students for Democratic Society, and myself. And the headline read, "Lampshades, Lampshades, Lampshades," and the copy underneath it went on to indicate that the only way black people would free themselves from white oppression was to kill these four Jewish leaders who were there. And of course, they too had to get this approved by the Washington office. And the Washington letter of approval, which I also got through the Freedom of Information Act, indicated this letter was not to be traceable to the Bureau. This letter facetiously suggesting the elimination of these leaders. So this was covering their corporate ass, because if anybody killed any of us, we were just being facetious. You can see it on paper there. So at the same time, I have to say that I have had total freedom to publish what I want in America. It's the paradox of this country, that we have the total freedom to say how rotten things are, to continue as a relay race from Watergate to a Rand scam. In the next issue, I'm going to publish by Tony Russo, who leaked the Pentagon Papers with Daniel Ellsberg, a delineation of all of the comparisons and links between Watergate and Iran scam. And I think I mentioned one last night, which is that in Watergate we had the Nixon tapes with 18 and a half minutes missing. We don't have those tapes in this administration, but we did have the former head of the CIA, William Casey, getting a brain operation in which they removed only the section from August 1985 through November 1986. And this could make one suspicious of some kind of cover-up. It's interesting because I just came now from dinner with the five Russian visitors, and we ate at the Holiday Inn. They all got the specialty of the house, which was pork ribs, which comes with these huge bibs that they give out when you eat ribs. And so this one Russian got a bib that said Miss America on it. And another one got a thing that a big S for Superman. I mean, we're really giving them a dose of our culture here. And it was interesting to watch them go through the salad bar, you know, and there's corn chowder. And he says, one of them, is this typical American soup? And I didn't quite know how to answer. I mean, I haven't had corn chowder in years, and yet I'm sure it's typical somewhere in the country. But in America, at the Holiday Inn, it comes with the dental floss right in there, so that you can. With little particles on it, so that if you get hungry between meals, you can floss and fill that little snack appetite simultaneously. One of the conversations we had over dinner was trying to compare The Realist, which I see copies of there for you, with Crocodile, which is the Russian humor publication. And they had the editor-in-chief there and also their caricaturist, who told me about a cartoon idea he had, and it was about Margaret Thatcher. This is when we wanted to have the missile bases in all parts of Eastern Europe with the cooperation of England. And so this cartoon he described to me by way of a translator was of Margaret Thatcher laying spread-eagled on a bed, and the Americans saying, where do you want us to put the missiles? And I said, are you going to print that in Crocodile? And he said, oh, no. So I asked if I could have it, and he said, no. He wasn't good drawing on a cross-cultural basis like that. And so then they were asking me through the translator about the, you know, what humor publications, satirical publications that were in America. And I said, not that many, really. There is Mad Magazine, which is for teenagers, and there is National Lampoon, which is for sort of post-teenagers. And I said, but I'm doing a column for National Lampoon now, and they just rejected my third one, even though the editors like it very much. And the Russian editor of Crocodile says, well, what was it about? And I explained it was about the time I snorted cocaine with the Pope. And so the translator does a little double take and goes, and translates. I hear him say something like Snifsky. So I knew it was an accurate translation. This had to do with, I guess I have time to tell this story. It was on the Pope's, and the context was that the Pope is coming again, and the last time, and next year, 1988, will be the 20th anniversary of the assassination of Robert Kennedy, and we like to do things in by the metric system here, only in celebration of events. So 10 and 20 years always gets a big play. For example, this year you'll see a lot of stuff about the Summer of Love in Haight-Ashbury because it's the 20th anniversary of that. So I explained how I had represented the alternative press. This was in Chicago when the Pope was on his whirlwind tour. You probably saw the jackets that they wore. The Pope whirlwind tour. He was going around speaking to various youth groups in America. And Cardinal Cody came up to me And I knew it was Cardinal Cody because he kept dropping money from his vestment. You know, he said, that's all right, it's for my sister, I'll get it, it's okay. Don't you worry about it. And he said, look, the Pope is really tired from his whirlwind tour. You've been pointed out as somebody who might have cocaine, and the Pope needs to get a little refreshed. Could you help him out? And now, I ordinarily don't do cocaine. I mean, coke to me is like meat. If somebody serves it, I'll chew it. But I won't buy it myself. But somebody had given me some for my birthday, so I said, okay, look, I'm going to go in the bathroom there. Tell the Pope to wait 3 minutes and then follow me in. Yeah. I mean, you got to be discreet. You walk into the bathroom with the Pope, people are going to talk. So I get there. I get out this little mirror and this little stash, and I'm kind of chopping it up. Sure enough, 3 minutes later, the Pope walks in, and looking just like himself, with the rosy cheeks and a little yarmulke here, and the collar that's waving in the breeze, even though there's no breeze. And naturally, I hand him the mirror. This is one of Heloise's hints. Always let the Pope snort first. It's only polite. So, and he knows 21 different languages. He's going through his whole repertoire there. Very nice, very nice. Magnifique. Wunderbar. He's just going, and his brain's getting frozen all the time. And his, you know, I'm just kind of making small talk. You know, what's Lech Walesa really like? But then as we get further on, he's really getting a loose tongue, and he starts talking about, you know, I say, tell me the truth, your royal pontiff. Do you really believe in God and being possessed by the devil and all that stuff? Is that just for the tourists? And he says, no. He says, that's really true. It's a basic part of our theology. For example, Ronald Reagan is possessed by the devil. I didn't know that. Have another snort. You know? So he explains to me that when Reagan was shot by John Hinckley, the orderly in the hospital found a little 666 behind his left ear, which in the New Testament under Revelation, that is the mark of the beast. 666, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Naturally, this orderly got kicked upstairs, and we never, you know, was censored out of the Washington Post. We never heard about that. But I was wondering, I said, listen, Pope, is this just the Republican Party that's possessed by Satan, or is it a bipartisan policy? And he said, no, the Democrats too. He said, Robert Kennedy, your hero, who was shot in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles in 1968, June 4th, and there was a lot of question about that, whether it was a conspiracy or not, because the official autopsy report showed that although Kennedy had been here in the kitchen of the hotel after his after he won the California primary and said, on to Chicago, and Sirhan Sirhan was over here, and when Sirhan shot him, I feel I know him well enough to call him by his last name. So the autopsy showed that even though he was shot from the front, there was a bullet in the back of Kennedy's head. And so this was a real anomaly. Plus the fact that the gun that Sirhan Sirhan had only held 8 bullets, and there was a total of 10 bullets in the door jamb and in Kennedy's body and in the Union official and in other people who got hit by the spray of bullets. And and this, as I said, was in the official autopsy by Thomas Noguchi, who was then the L.A. County coroner. He has since been fired for dancing on the graves of his celebrity clients. But, as a matter of fact, he is still performing autopsies on a freelance basis. Why? Because he likes to work with people. All right, now, as the Pope explained it to me, at the precise moment that Sirhan was shooting at Bobby Kennedy, Kennedy, possessed by Satan, his head turned around 180 degrees, just like Linda Blair in The Exorcist. And this explained that puzzlement to me. You know, there was no second gunman after all. It was a great relief to me. And just then, Cardinal Cody knocked on the door. 5 minutes, Pope. And so the Pope says to me, would you, is there anything I can do for you? I appreciate this Peruvian flake. He recognized it. When they were doing the secret war in Peru, he was still able to get his stash. And so he says, I would like to do something for you. I said, no, look, it's not reciprocal. This is just an ecumenical gesture. And he says, no, look, I got connections, I got a lot of power, let me do something for you. I said, okay, do you think you could get a pardon for Galileo? He says, well, you know, I got to go through channels, but it can be done. It would be wrong, but it can be done. And several months later, indeed, the Catholic hierarchy granted a pardon to Galileo. They didn't admit that the earth was round, but they granted him a pardon anyway. And so he was a pope of his word. And if you saw him on television that night talking to the youth, he was really, he said, I'd like to greet the youth of America. Woo, 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 woo. Remember he did that? He kept going, woo, woo, woo. We know now why. This is the explanation. So anyway, I asked the Russian editor, I said, do you think you'd be interested in that story? He said, no. So I guess it's still a little bit repressive there. Thank you.
I'd like to conclude today's program by replaying the book question that was recorded in an interview with Paul Krasner in January of 1995. Paul, in a somewhat of a serious vein, I'd like to ask you about the effect of the media on shaping ideas and public relations in our country.
Well, look, you know, the media want numbers of people watching. We are the product. The viewers are the product. And they sell us to the advertisers. The advertisers want to reach as many people as possible because they know that on their in their commercials that will sell people. Obviously, people get influenced. The most unintentionally satiric commercial I've seen is one for a place that sells cakes and cookies and things, and they just have and it's called Coco's, and the two O's in Coco's are twirling around like a hypnotic thing, and the voice is saying, in the hypnotic thing, you will want, and they're showing beautiful cakes and pies, so it's almost like food pornography, and they're saying, you will go out to Coco's and you will buy these cakes. And it, you know, it's really just what everybody else does, except a little, not so blatantly, which is, that, you know, it's a form of hypnotism. I think of the TV set as a hypnotic propagandistic machine that people who would have on their front doors, no solicitors, allow them to come in into their living room through the tube. So it's you know, it steals time and energy and has laugh tracks on sitcoms so that if you don't know something is funny, they'll tell you. It's the lowest form of fascism. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess it does. A question that I always like to ask my guests near the end of our interview is if you could tell us about some interesting books that you've read recently or heard about recently that you would recommend to our listeners.
Well, I'm just started to read one now about called Monster by a guy named Cody, who was a gang leader, to get some insight into how gangs work, because it's another whole culture. I don't know, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of gangs in the country, and they're like family substitutes and with loyalty. And what's frightening is that the old mafia, you know, at least they had a sense of a code. They wouldn't shoot people at random, you know, for some kind of initiation. So it's really frightening. I mean, I'm an anarchist in the best sense of the word, but I think that there has developed in the society anarchy in the worst sense of the word, because, you know, the cops know that there are these gangs who are ruining the society on one level, and yet, you know, there's the irony that it was Oliver North who was helping bringing some of the cocaine into the country, you know, on the same planes that flew weapons to the Contras. So there's so much evil hypocrisy like that, that the only reason I still have optimism is because of chromosome damage. No, that's not true. I like to say what, to quote the late Harry Chapin, the songwriter, who said, if you don't act like there's hope, there is no hope. And there's a lot of good people doing a lot of good things, and it's just that the negative things get the media attention because that's what makes news. But there's a lot of people with good souls doing good works, not getting public credit for it, but knowing in their hearts that, you know, that if you want to change the world, you have to start with yourself and work your way out.
And you started with The Realist.
Well, yeah, but that was only for reassurance that I knew I couldn't be the only one who saw the culture through an alternative filter.
Well, Paul Krasner, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been fun. Thank you, Barry.
All right.
Take care.
There are a couple of things I'd like you to remember about this program. The ideas expressed by our guests do not necessarily represent the ideas of this radio station, its management staff, board of directors, or me. Secondly, the book that Paul Krasner recommended in 1995 is called Monster by a guy named Cody. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.